So, good evening, everybody. My name is Jaime Contreras, and I'm Generation Engage's San Jose Outreach Coordinator. And it's my great pleasure to welcome all of you. And here, our group in Aspen, and our groups hopefully joining us very soon in Miami, in Charlotte, and in all the different ways. So, tonight's Generation iChat conversation is obviously with General Colin Powell. And thank you so much, General, for allowing us to be here with you and share in your vast knowledge.
Thank you, Jaime.
So tonight's conversation is a product of weeks and weeks of hard work from several grassroots organizations. And through the early summer, our members have been identifying questions, question askers, and community action points through several ongoing small group discussions. Our friends at Apple, Google, and Track Entertainment have lent us the technological infrastructure to connect this evening. But more than anyone else, I'd like to thank our friends at the Aspen Institute and at the 2007 Aspen Ideas Festival. On behalf of my colleagues in the five cities across the country, thank you, Mr. Isaacson, wherever you are and the rest of the Aspen gang. In recognition of Aspen's friendship, I think that it's appropriate to briefly revisit the principles upon which Generation Engage is built. First, we believe that young people suffer not from a lack of interest, but rather suffer from a lack of access. But with the help of our local partners and in this innovative technology, we're building that infrastructure where it hasn't existed before. Generation Engage targets the 49% of young Americans who are not on the traditional four-year college campus. We also target the young new immigrants so that all young people, regardless of education, and if you will allow me to, en cualquier idioma, can take part in meaningful conversation about the future that we will all inherit. Secondly, we believe that democracy is a dialogue rather than a monologue. And together, we're shifting that political conversation off the television airwaves and into our everyday lives. Lastly, we believe firmly that the best investment we can make in the future of our democracy is in young people at the local level. And that's precisely what tonight's all about. So it's with great pride that we hand the mic over to young people all over the country. With that, I'd like to welcome again General Colin Powell and allow him to make some opening remarks here.
Well, thank you very much, Jaime. I'm sorry that we're having these technical difficulties, but hopefully the three cities will come up before the time expires. I congratulate you and all those involved in Generation Chat and Generation Engage for doing this with the iChat system. I think it's so important for all young people to be involved in what's happening in their communities, what's happening in the nation, and to inform themselves about the issues of the day. It is especially the case, as you noted, something that is needed for those who are not necessarily in college. They're doing other things that are important in life. Not everybody has to be a college graduate to do something important in life. In fact, some of the greatest achievements that we've seen in our country have come from people who just believed in themselves, believed in the opportunities that were presented to them, and made the best of those opportunities. And so to get these groups together in communities across the country where they can talk about the issues, engage with local politicians, as we saw earlier, the kids in Miami-Dade were talking to the mayor of Miami-Dade, I think is very, very important. An informed public is what makes this country work, and so I'm delighted to be a part of it.
Thank you, General Powell. Then we'll move forward into the first question. This question actually comes from Miami. And the fellow who asked says, government leaders, his question concerns what you've coined the phrase as big citizenship. Can you tell us what you mean by this and how you believe we as young leaders can foster a sense of social responsibility in our communities and among our peers?
Yeah, it's a great phrase, although I never use it. I'm not the author of this phrase, but it's a good phrase. Just start with the word citizenship. For the young people who are participating in Generation Engage, it means that you are the leaders of your community. You can't just look to your political leaders. You can't just watch television. You can't just criticize. You can't just be unhappy. If you're unhappy, do something about it. Engage. If you don't like what you see happening in your community, then organize. Organize in the form of nonprofit organizations or other kinds of organizations that will rally around a particular cause and take that cause to your political leaders, take it to your fellow citizens. And so citizenship means being a good citizen in participating in dialogue within your community and doing what you can to solve a problem. For young people especially, don't just sit back and say, well, things are all messed up and what we really need to do is change the government in Washington. Change what's happening in your community. If you don't like conditions in your community, don't say, what's the government going to do about it? Look in a mirror, and big citizenship means, what am I going to do about it? What contribution can I make? There's not a single young person in any of the cities that Generation Engage is operating in that does not have some capacity to help with their time, with their talent, perhaps with their treasure. And so it's good to chat, but engage means engage, not just talk about things, but find ways in which you can contribute your time, talent, and treasure to bettering your community, helping others in your community, or just making your community a better place. I'm very involved in an organization with my wife called America's Promise, and its whole focus is getting the whole country to engage in the problems of our young people, to make sure that young people in need who are not sure whether the American dream is there for them, make sure those young people have in their lives mentors, people who will inspire them, people who can be role models to them, but an adult who will pass on all the experiences of past generations. Also, we want to make sure that young people have safe places in which to learn and to grow so that they are protected from the problems that exist in so many of our communities. We also want to make sure through America's Promise that all of our children have a healthy start in life and they're covered by insurance and they get the medical care that they need. And fourth, they get the education they need to participate in this changing economic system that we live in, where increasingly services and information technology drive the creation of the kinds of jobs that are going to be there for Americans. And we got to make sure our kids are ready for those jobs. And then the fifth part of America's Promise, which fits so perfectly with Generation Engage, is to give back to your community. Don't just shout, don't just scream, just don't point fingers at someone else. But you get involved, you give back to your community. And the challenge I would throw out to young people, and the question I would ask to all of the audiences watching when they do come on is, what are you doing? What are you doing? Don't ask me how to fix Washington if I knew how to do that. I mean, if anybody knew how to do that, we would get it done, I guess. But the real question is, what are you doing? What can you do? And what do you think your fellow citizens and the other young people there with you can do?
Thank you, General. So, along the same line as that question and your response to that, how can we help address the disparity between those resources available to students and those resources available or not available, rather, to those that are off the university campuses?
I think that a government at every level, local, especially local, and state level, have a responsibility to make sure that resources available to all young people who need to acquire the skills to enter into the workplace. Obviously, college education requires more than a technical education. But my concern and my interest really is focused not on college education, but on K-12 education. This is where America has its greatest challenge and where we're falling down. If you can qualify yourself through getting a good education through high school, you can find a college to go to and find the means to go to that college through scholarships, through grants and other opportunities for financial support. But if you don't get that high school education, if you don't get a good grounding in elementary school and middle school, and if you don't get a good high school education, then you're not going to get into college. For those youngsters who are not college-oriented, who don't want to go to college or want to do something else in life, and there are so many other needs that our country has that have nothing to do with a college education, our technicians, our specialists who need that special education, then I think we should do something along the lines of what was done when I was coming up in New York City, and that is to invest more in technical high schools, in trade-oriented high schools, so we make sure that we are giving these youngsters the opportunity to excel at a trade or in a technical specialty, and then move on and make their contribution in our society. I think a government has a responsibility to provide a comprehensive education for all youngsters, whether they're going to college or not.
In light of the recent Supreme Court ruling regarding affirmative action, how do you think that this is going to affect this generation?
I don't know. Affirmative action is a very complex issue, and some would say this really wasn't an affirmative action issue. It had to do with how schools were managing the desire to have diversity. I regret the Supreme Court decision. I wish it had not gone that way, but it has, and we've got to move on. All of us hope for the day when these kinds of decisions and these kinds of programs will not be necessary at all. We won't need any affirmative action. We won't need any efforts to create diversity. But I don't think we're there right now. And when people say, well, we have to have a society that does nothing on the basis of race, I say, that's great. I wish it had existed for the first 200 years of this nation's history. And then we wouldn't have carried that bad legacy of our history into the current life that we live and into the current generation. But those problems still exist. It was Joel Klein, the chancellor of the New York City school system, the other day in a meeting we were having with him where he said, I don't have to worry about balancing because all of my schools are totally minority. I've got nothing to balance them with. I've got nothing to make them diverse with. The public schools in the community near mine in Washington, D.C., is almost 100% minority now. The school that Alma and I adopted and our church works with to help from Northwest Washington, D.C., is 100% Hispanic and African American. And these kids come from communities and from neighborhoods where they have needs that are not being satisfied. And those are the kids we have to work with and get them moving ahead. So I think we have these problems in our society. And I regret that the Supreme Court, rather than leaving these tools available to these communities, and these were programs that were developed by the community and approved by the citizens in the community. I think we should give our community leaders and youngsters, such as the Generation Engage youngsters, the opportunity to use these tools to correct the rights, correct the wrongs that still exist in so many of our communities.
So immigration is a huge issue in all of the country, and particularly in the cities in which Generation Engage is involved. What would you recommend to those new immigrants, those new young immigrants who have the passion, but at the same time have some reservations about becoming politically active and participating in their communities?
Well, get rid of your reservations first and foremost. Learn the language as quickly as you can and become masters of the English language. The Colin Powell Center for Policy Studies at City College of New York in Harlem, where I graduated from, is 90% minority and 50% of the students are immigrants. They're not children of immigrants, they are immigrants. And they came to this country for the same reason my parents came here 80 years ago, and that is to grab that American dream. And I can tell you, these youngsters are hungry. They are hungry. Alma and I met one of them the other day on campus, and he was walking by with a book this thick. And I said, you actually read that thing? I've never read anything that thick in my life. And he said, I'm working on it. And he had a Hispanic accent, and I said to him, well, where are you from? Ecuador. How long have you been here? 5 years. How are you getting along? Well, it's been hard. I spoke no English when I got here, and I went to work washing dishes. But everybody else there spoke Spanish, and I wasn't learning any English, so I got a job in a warehouse. And the first word I learned, the first expression I learned was okay, and that's all I knew. And I was working hard, and the manager came up to me one day and said, you're doing a good job. How would you like to be in charge of all the people here? And he said, okay. But he didn't know what he'd been asked. But nevertheless, he suddenly found himself in charge. And he went from okay to okay to okay. And he grabbed every opportunity that came along by saying, okay, I'll try it. I'll do my best. And now his English is flawless. He is getting his education at the City College of New York. And what does he want to do? He wants to become a political scientist. He wants to become active politically in this new country of ours. And so that option of participating in the political process is open to every immigrant youngster coming to this country, just like it's open to every American in this country. And I hope they grab it, and I hope they are encouraged to be active politically. The immigration bill that I think was before the Senate a couple of weeks ago, I thought was a good piece of legislation. I worked with President Bush in my 4 years as Secretary of State to get something going on the immigration issue. And Americans want their borders protected. There's nothing wrong with securing our borders so that people can only come in legally. And that's fine. Let's invest in that, and let's do that. But at the same time, we cannot ignore the fact that we have 12 million people who are here without documentation. They are illegal, and they are contributing to our economy. They are contributing to our society. They are bringing up youngsters who are going to be great citizens. They want to find their status or get their status regularized. So we have to find a way to let them enter into a process which will allow them to get green cards and become citizens and become full members of our society. So we need both things, protect the border, but also bring these people out of an illegal status, an undocumented status. Have them pay for it. Have them be penalized. Let them be penalized for the fact that they came here illegally, but put them in the process to become citizens who are documented and not undocumented.
Thank you, General Paul. I think what we're going to try to do right now is take a question from New York. New York, do you have a question ready for us?
Yes, we do. Jaime, thank you for calling on us. General Powell, thank you for joining us for this iChat. We're going to go with our first question. 1 second.
Good evening, General Powell. My name is Daniel Lansing. I'm a 22-year-old Iraq veteran, and I'm representing the Iraq-Afghanistan Veterans of America. My question tonight is in regards to post-traumatic stress disorder. It's important to know that one in every three Iraq veterans and one in every nine Afghanistan veterans suffer from this disorder. My question to you tonight is, what should be done for these veterans, these soldiers, sailors, and Marines coming home?
This is a real injury that has been with us throughout all of our wars. And I think we are now better able to identify people who are suffering from this injury, this illness, this result of conflict. And so I think that part of the investigations that are going on now, part of the work that is being done by the various commissions that have been set up, is to make sure that we are putting in place in our Veterans Administration system people who are trained to handle post-traumatic stress disorder, and that we give our veterans who are suffering from this all the help we possibly can through disability findings and through the Veterans Administration system. And if the VA is not up to handling it all and the military cannot handle it all, then we should fund whatever programs are necessary to get that kind of treatment out in the civilian medical world. They're not as well equipped to handle it as the VA, but or the military for that matter. But if we have exceeded the capacity of our VA and military medical facilities, then I think we have to reach out into the broader medical, civilian medical world in order to get our troops the help that they need. Youngsters who have gone off and fought in war and have come back injured either physically or with other kinds of illnesses deserve everything the American people can give them for the sacrifice that they have made.
Thank you, Mike. And now we're going to take a question from Charlotte. Courtney, can you hear us in Charlotte? Are you ready with the question?
Yes, we hear you, and we're ready.
Yes, we hear you. We are ready.
Excellent. Go ahead. Go ahead.
Hi, I'm Kathy Cervantes, and I'm 24 years old, and I live here in Charlotte. And my question was, well, thank you very much, General Powell, first of all, for speaking with us tonight. But my question, as someone who has always tried to do that extra little step to try to be that bigger citizen, what kind of role models are out there, especially when we start getting frustrated and start feeling as if we don't make a difference? What kind of role models are out there to keep us kind of focused and engaged?
You know, I get asked a lot about role models, and Who were my role models when I was growing up? Well, first and foremost, members of my family, parents. But, you know, you don't need a big star, somebody in television or somebody in political life, to latch onto as a role model. First and foremost, be your own role model. You know what the right things in life are to do. You know what you have to do in order to be successful, to work hard. So first and foremost, look at yourself constantly and say, am I doing everything I can? Am I improving myself? Am I doing things that I probably should avoid doing? And first and foremost, be your own role model. And then as you go through your day-to-day activities, look at those people who are doing things right, who are doing things well. Look at those people you admire. It doesn't have to be somebody who is very famous. I've often told young people, have you ever walked to school and seen a woman who was standing at a bus stop early in the morning to get on a bus to go work all day long at a hard job in order to earn a living to come back home that evening and take care of her child? That is as good a role model as you're going to get. So don't always be looking for the star. Just look for those people who are working hard, living a good life, who believe in themselves, who believe in America, and you can learn a lot from them. Also, I have found that people who I didn't get along with, who I had trouble with, tended to be good role models also. People who thought that I was not up to standards and I didn't think they were up to standards. And what I would do in a situation like that, and if I had failed a test they had given me or a challenge they had given me, I'd always try to find out what went wrong here and learn from the negative experiences in life as much as you learn from the positive experiences in life. And so young people are always looking for role models, and sometimes they find bad ones, and I won't name any here this evening. But you don't have to look that far. Look in your own community. Who is taking care of business in the community? Who are you proud of being around in the community? Your teachers, your coaches, the ministers in your church, or the other religious leaders in your community. These are people you should look to, and not just look to see who is on the evening news that night.
Thank you very much, Charlotte. New York, we're going to head over to you for the next question. And mind you, we've gone through a couple questions already.
Thank you, Jaime. Our next question is coming from a familiar place, General Powell. One second.
Hello, my name is Raven Robinson, and I'm president of student council in Morris High School and School for Excellence. And my question to you tonight is, with the requirements of New York City standards going up for high school students, do you feel that sometimes schools focus on how to engage children academically and forget about teaching them how to adapt socially in the world?
Morris High School?
Yeah.
I graduated from Morris 53 years ago, I guess it is now. People are laughing here when I said that. But it was a very long time ago. And when I was at Morris, we had high academic standards. They really pressed us on English and math. And I was pretty good in English, less so in math. But they also had a vibrant athletic program. They had all sorts of community involvement programs. I was in a program called the Service League. And as part of my membership in the Service League, and at one time I was president of the Service League, we were expected to mobilize students in the school to help run the school and to take care of things that needed to be done in the school. We served the school. We served our fellow students. We also had a very aggressive music program and a very comprehensive art program where we had to sit there and look at slides of the great paintings of our time and our pastimes, great paintings of history, and be educated on what those paintings meant. And I think, you know, I was bored at the time. I really didn't want to hear much more about Michelangelo or Rembrandt or Chagall. But I learned in later years that they were giving me a more well-rounded education. It isn't just teaching to a test, teaching to a standard. It's educating young people for the world in which they're going to live. And that has to include academics. It has to include the arts. It has to include physical activity. And it has to include giving back inside the school environment.
Thank you.
Morris has been broken up into a number of schools now, though, hasn't it? Do you like it? You'd better say yes. Say yes, sir. You're going to be in trouble with Joel Klein, the chancellor. Okay, good. You got the yes.
Thank you so much, Raven. I think we actually have a question here in Aspen. So if that person would like to come up and...
Okay, moving back to Charlotte then.
We'll go to Charlotte, yes. Charlotte, do you have a question ready for us? Rod?
Yes, sir.
Go ahead.
Hello, General Powell.
Hi, how are you?
Hi, my name is Brett Labello, and I'm a 28-year-old here in Charlotte. I have a two-part question for you.
28-year-old what?
What you do on a local level influence what happens on a global level. And the second part is, how do you get people concerned about what is happening on the global level when there's so many problems and challenges here on the local level? Thank you.
Well-educated young people have to be concerned about both levels. We no longer can just live on the local level. The jobs that you are preparing yourself for, the economy that you are becoming a part of is now a global economy. So you can't just learn what's going on and be interested in what's going on in Charlotte. If you want to see Charlotte strive, you'd better also be paying attention to what's going on in China, in Russia, in Europe, and lots of other places. You need to see how we're dealing with crises in places like Iraq and Afghanistan. And so the distinction between local and global, I think, is rapidly disappearing as the world becomes flatter and flatter, as Mr. Friedman says, and as information technology, such as the type that we're using here tonight, brings us all closer together. And so for young people such as you to be effective in your community, you also have to have a solid understanding of what's going on in the rest of the world.
Thank you very much for that question, Brett. Let's move on to our question, back to our question here in Aspen.
Hello. In your opinion, what are the best qualities to develop as a young leader?
Be someone you can that can be counted on. Develop a reputation for dependability. As a young person coming up, get all the skills you can. Education never ends. It starts in kindergarten and continues until you're my age. I'm learning every day. I'm studying every day. So don't be afraid to constantly add to your body of experience and knowledge and education. The reason I started with developing a strong reputation and being someone to be counted on is because in my life I have found, particularly in the Army, that as I started out, no matter what job I got, no matter how tired I was or afraid I was or all the other things that happens to a soldier, I always tried to do the best I could. And that was recognized by my superiors. And my superiors moved me along because I developed a reputation for being able to achieve a mission or get a job done. You are at that stage in your lives now where you are developing a reputation. Reputation is something that builds like coral over time, and it can be destroyed like coral very quickly. So always be working hard to build that reputation. Develop early in life a sense of loyalty to the people around you, first and foremost to the people at your level, your fellow workers, your fellow students. Develop bonds of loyalty. And then always remember, for the person you're working for your superior, always be loyal to that superior. Be honest with that superior, but always loyal when decisions are made and you have to carry them out. Be a person of absolute honesty and integrity with high ethical standards. And always be pushing yourself to achieve a higher standard in whatever you're doing. And I have found if you just follow these simple rules, work and life takes care of itself. When you go home after a hard day's work or a hard day at school, what you really want to go home with is a sense that you have accomplished something that day. Promotions will come or not come, riches will come or not come, but the most important thing that will give you satisfaction at the end of your day and the end of your life is, do you feel that you've done your very best? So always be trying to do your very best. And if you do that, people will recognize that and they will move you along.
Thank you, General Powell.
Thank you.
Thank you, Laura, for that thoughtful question. Next, we're going to go to New York for another question, and then we're going to try to connect to Miami. So, Jason, do you have another question for us?
Good evening, General Powell. I'm Jasmine Rivadavia, and I'm 15. Many elected officials are concerned about closing prisons such as Guantanamo and Abu Ghraib. What should we do as young people to promote awareness regarding prison industrial complexes in our country, as well as things like the $1 million block?
Well, Abu Ghraib was an exception to American military professionalism, and the people who are responsible for that have been dealt with and punished. Guantanamo, I think, should be closed right away. Whatever value we are getting from detaining those people there, far outweighed by what we're losing in terms of world opinion and the fact that the world is looking to us and starting to hide behind Guantanamo with their own misbehaviors. When I see a dictator or an autocrat get up and say that, don't lecture us while you have a place such as Guantanamo. So I would close it immediately and bring those detainees into our federal system here in the United States of America. I wouldn't let them go. These are people who are bad. They're troublemakers. And some of them would do terrible things to us if they ever got the opportunity. But I think they can be dealt with in our federal system here in the United States, and I think they ought to be given access to lawyers and be given access to the writ of habeas corpus. We have 2 million people in jail here in America, which was the point you were leading to, and they all had lawyers and they all had habeas corpus, and they went to jail anyway because they are criminals, because they did things that are wrong. And so we have the highest incarceration rate of any nation in the world, and it's shameful, it's disgraceful. But it is not the incarceration system that has done this. It has been the problems in our society that cause people to commit crimes that they now have to pay for. And so they're not in jail because somebody wanted to put them in jail. They're in jail because they committed a crime. So what can you as young people do to keep this flow of youngsters from continuing to go into jail? First of all, make sure that all of you are doing everything you can to live the right kind of life and avoid the kinds of problems that would move you in this direction. But the greatest contribution you could make at the ages you represent, 18 to 29, is to reach down to young people. Reach down to other members of your family, the young kids in your family, and make sure you keep them moving in the right direction. Keep them away from drugs. Most of these folks are in jail because of drugs. Are you doing everything you can in your community to say, we will not use pot? We will not allow this drug to be used in my family or in my community. When I was growing up in the Bronx and going to Morris High School, it was made clear to everybody in my family, all of my cousins, you ever use that and you'll have to find another family. It's just unacceptable. It shames the family. It is unacceptable. It will destroy your life and you can't do it. Are you helping to communicate that message to every young person in your community? And so the role you have to play is not point at the incarceration system, which is bad enough, but to make sure we start cutting off the farm teams we have that send people to that incarceration system. Mentor youngsters. If a youngster shows up in kindergarten and does not yet know how to tell time or count or has never been read to or doesn't know his or her colors, goes into kindergarten, then into the first grade, learns very early on that they are behind other kids and start to fall behind by the second grade. And by the third grade, they know they're behind. They begin to lose faith, and they start wondering if they can be successful in life. It's as early as that when they start to have that sense of failure put into their hearts and minds. And they are on a trail that will take them to jail. There are statistics that will show that you could look at the reading level in third grade and predict the incarceration rate of that cohort of youngsters 15 years later. There's a direct correlation. And so what are you youngsters doing, you young adults, you teenagers, what are you doing to make sure that in your family, in your neighborhood, in your apartment house, you're doing everything you can to keep kids from moving in that direction?
Thank you so much for that very interesting question there. We're going to try to make connection with Miami right now, and we'll give that a few moments. And if that doesn't matriculate, then we'll have the question right here for them. Okay. Then we're going to ask a question from Charlotte. This is a gentleman named Femi Kirby. He's 25 years old, and he says, thinking about young people today in comparison to the generation of the civil rights movement, do you think we have the potential to make an impact just as significant and help change the course of history for the better?
Sure. Whether you know it or not, you're going to do that, whether you want to or not. I mean, we're all on the downslope. And so ready or not, this country is going to be yours. And ready or not, you're going to have to move up to leadership positions in your community. And it is from this cohort of young people that we're going to get our future business leaders, our future academic leaders, our future scientists and technologists, our future politicians, our future senators, congressmen, and presidents. And I have no doubt that the current generation will meet the challenges. Every generation is faced with new challenges and new opportunities. And we have not had an American generation come along yet that has not found a way to meet those challenges and opportunities. Just as the leaders of the civil rights revolution did not know they were about to start a revolution, but they did start a revolution, and they succeeded in fighting that peaceful revolution for the most part, which resulted in the end of segregation and the Civil Rights Act of 1964 and then the Voting Rights Act of 1965, and we kept moving on. This generation is perhaps one of the most qualified and prepared generations because you are all internet geniuses. You know how this modern world works, and you are going to some of the finest schools that the world has ever seen. And so I have no doubt that the current generation, when it becomes their turn to step into leadership positions, will do it and do it well.
Thank you. Thank you for that question, Charlotte. Actually, let's see if Miami is ready with a question. If not, I'll ask the question for us right here. Miami, can you hear us? Do you have a question ready? I think they're still fumbling around. So I'll ask the question. This question is from Miami, and it's Sonia Paulus. She's 24 years old, and she asks, Martin Luther King devoted several days a year to serving a community alongside community members. Do you too believe that community service is more than just an arbitrary act and part of our civic responsibility?
Yes, I think it is the responsibility of every citizen to give back to their community using their time, their talent, their treasure. But most importantly, and what we're trying to do with America's Promise, is to instill this value and virtue into young people. That's why we like service learning programs in high school and college, where as part of the curriculum, you're required to do some service learning in the community, whether it's Make a Difference Day, where you help clean up a vacant lot, or whether you work with older people at nursing homes, and you go and you read to them or attend to their needs. Every youngster should be exposed to that experience. And what I have found is if they are exposed to that experience, it really sticks with them, and they will take that value, that virtue, into adulthood.
So the next question I'm going to the next question I'm going to ask is coming from another Miami question. How can the government give families incentive to integrate the concept of civic engagement into their households? And what kind of incentives do you feel these should be?
Stop asking the government to do everything. Government has many programs that allow people to volunteer and to serve at every level, local, state, and national level. But don't just keep waiting for the government to tell you what to do or to give you the program to work in. Everybody can look around their community and see what needs to be done. Do you need a Boys and Girls Club? Is there a church mentoring program? What is your church doing? What is your synagogue doing? Does your school, your elementary school, need teacher's assistance? Is there a need for somebody to run for the school board? There are so many things that you can be doing right there in your community that you don't need the government to support or resource for you, or resource yourself. And so what we have to do is make sure that civic engagement is something that is the responsibility of each and every one of us, and not just the responsibility of the government to make it happen.
With that question, General Powell, I think we'll wrap it up here. I apologize to everybody. If we want, we've got one more question here. We've got time if General Powell allows it.
I believe it was Benjamin Franklin who said that those who sacrifice a little bit of liberty for a little bit of security will lose both and deserve neither. And I was wondering if you agree with that, particularly in regard to military tribunals in which the Bush administration can appoint prosecution, defense, and judge, or do those people, are they not under the umbrella of American rights?
Are you talking about the military commissions?
Yes, sir.
The military commissions are legal. They've been used in the past. And so I'm very familiar with how military officers and military lawyers go about their business. And I'm confident that these people will be defended well. But the military commission, as it is currently designed, doesn't bring other aspects of American jurisprudence to the issue, such as facing all witnesses, such as getting all of the data that the government has before the commission. And so for that reason, even though they have been used in the past and they are legal entities, I would prefer to see the detainees at Guantanamo brought into our federal system. And even if they are brought to the United States and they don't want to put them in the federal civil system, then put them in the military court-martial system. The military court-martial system is guided by a manual that is approved by Congress on a regular basis with all of the protections that you would expect an American soldier to have. Let's give it to these detainees. And I fully agree with what Mr. Franklin said.
Thank you so much for that final question, Kelly. And thank you, General Powell, again.
Thank you, honey.